This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And yesterday, Monday, was our first opportunity on this program to react to the George Zimmerman verdict and the Trayvon Martin case. And we spoke with some African-American parents and some legal experts about how this directly affects their lives. And today, we extend that discussion to another group of people whose role in our communities may now be questioned by the verdict in the Zimmerman case. People who ostensibly do what George Zimmerman said he was doing in Sanford, Florida in 2012, watching his neighborhood. But folks, there are neighborhood watchers all around America. In 1972, a formal U.S. neighborhood watch program was established by the National Sheriff's Association. This is a long and venerable tradition that runs parallel to America's complicated history with suspicion of strangers, worries about crime, access to guns. Self-policed neighborhood watches go back to the American Revolution. They resurfaced during Prohibition, during the Cold War, as a projection of our fear of communism. And it's a response to the crime waves of the 60s and 70s in urban America. This tradition is being examined again. Here's what people in our audience are saying about this citizen watch idea following the Zimmerman verdict. In Portland, Oregon, one listener said, "I have never lived in a place where the police were not sufficient protection for my neighborhood, nor do I understand gated communities that hire their own armed guards." From North Augusta, South Carolina, a listener said, I think they're a good idea, but I'll also say that the head of my local watch, again from this listener, is one of the nuttiest wingnuts I've ever met. From Lubbock, Texas, a listener says, I think they are a symptom of a paranoid society. From Clarkston, Michigan, I believe that when properly utilized, neighborhood watch groups can be excellent deterrents, a sampling of people from our audience. Our next guests are possibly facing such broad brush characterization by a nation who, before the death of Trayvon Martin and the George Zimmerman verdict, didn't have much of a sense of the 20,000 local neighborhood watch programs operating across the United States. Peter Nichols is the founder and coordinator of the Melrose Action Neighborhood Watch in Los Angeles, California. Welcome, Peter.
Hey, hello.
Barry Mullen has established crime watches on over 70 blocks in his neighborhood in Dorchester, Massachusetts. Barry, welcome to the show.
Hi.
And Larkin Eggleston is a neighborhood watch chairman for the Plaza Midwood Neighborhood Association in Charlotte, North Carolina. Larkin, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So to all three of you, the blunt question here is, suddenly, is what you do be the George Zimmerman of your neighborhood? Is that how people are going to look at you now, Peter Nichols?
No, not at all. You know, here in Los Angeles, the LAPD has a very long-standing community relations program, and it's a partnership. So I don't see any association, and I don't feel there's any sense of antagonistic feeling from the community out there at large at all.
Larkin Eggleston, does the George Zimmerman verdict and the case of Trayvon Martin define you in any sense?
No, I think it's all about kind of the attitude you have and the situation you create. Our neighborhood watch is certainly not encouraging anybody to drive around, get out of their vehicle, and confront someone they think isn't supposed to be in the neighborhood or might be committing a crime. Ours is more about creating a sense of awareness so that people are watching out for their neighbors, looking for things that seem out of place, and then calling the police to let them deal with those situations.
And Barry Mullen, are you suddenly Barry Zimmerman up there in Dorchester?
No, I agree with the other two gentlemen have said. Basically, we're just working to get people to know each other and to look out for each other, call the police, build those relationships.
What is the tradition, and I'll begin with you, Barry, of Neighborhood Watch? What is the motivation for starting these sorts of groups? What are the rules? How do you oversee the behavior of individuals?
I think here in Dorchester, the reason we started it up is because the neighborhood had a lot of disconnect. People weren't talking to each other. You know, with forced busing years ago, kids are being bused all over the neighborhood, all over the city, and parents didn't get a chance to talk to each other. So we're just trying to introduce people to who live on their streets and just get to know each other and to watch out for each other. That's basically where we are. And work directly with the police. You know, we call 911. You know, I would never get out of a car and confront somebody. It doesn't make sense. It's not my job.
And what's the history, Larkin Eggleston, of the Plaza Midwood Neighborhood Association and the watch chairmanship that you're currently in right now?
Yeah, much the same. I mean, ours is more about encouraging people to know who lives in their neighborhood, to be aware of what cars are usually parked in what driveways and things like that. So it's, again, it's really more about connecting the neighborhood, giving people an excuse to talk to each other and know each other, because the closer you are and the more you know with your neighbors, the more you're going to be able to spot something that's unusual or out of place.
Peter Nichols, since the verdict, you've been directly affected in that some neighborhoods have been concerned about protests and violence, and we even saw a little of that over the last 24 hours. What's going on?
Well, I think there's, you know, a little sense of unease after definitely last night. You know, there was a peaceful demonstration in an area called Leimert Park, and probably about 100 people out of maybe nearly a couple of thousand just kind of lost their minds a bit. So, you know, we're all on notice. You know, the LAPD, I'm told there's another protest today at 4 o'clock. And so they're kind of letting word get out there that they're going to really have a no-tolerance policy for any more crazy behavior.
All right. Well, that's a good update there. Peter, Barry, and Larkin, let me ask all three of you, do you or any of the people in your neighborhood watch groups carry firearms? Larkin?
We're actually looking at putting in place some more specific policies in terms of what we encourage people to do or discourage people to do. I guess if they're a legal concealed carry weapons holder, then, you know, it's legal for them to carry. We certainly wouldn't want to encourage people again to try and deal with these situations themselves. Our course of action is always going to be to recommend people see something and call police to let them deal with it, not try to do it themselves.
Barry Mullen, how about you? What's the policy there?
No guns, whistles, and cell phones. That's what we deal directly with the police.
And Peter Nichols, how about firearms there in Los Angeles?
Our only firearm is your finger dialing 911.
All right. So, this is a tough question for all three of you, because we spoke with a number of African-American parents yesterday on the program, and pundits and people who've been reacting to this. You've probably seen some of these kinds of remarks on media in the last 48 hours or so. But a jury in Florida basically said it is completely reasonable down there in the state of Florida that if you see a young man in a hoodie who's African-American, it's perfectly reasonable to think that they might be a threat. How do you respond to that, and does that change anything that you do in your neighborhood watch responsibilities? Larkin?
I mean, I think that's ridiculous. I would like to think that's not what the jury's mindset was, but certainly that's not something. I mean, the neighborhood that we live in here has not only a blend of white, black families, but also Hispanic and Asian, probably one of the most diverse neighborhoods in Charlotte. So the hope would be that if you moved into this neighborhood, you weren't intolerant. If you were, you picked a really bad neighborhood to move into. But the thought that seeing someone of a different skin color in this neighborhood would mean something was wrong would be pretty far off base.
Barry?
I find that pretty insane as well. You know, Boston's like the League of Nations. We have everybody here, and you know, we just have to understand that people are different, cultures are different, people wear different clothes. I mean, it's just an insane thing.
And Peter Nichols, how about you? It's reasonable to assume people in hoodies are threats. That's what the jury might have delivered as a message down there in Sanford, Florida.
That's totally crazy and out of sync. I concur with everybody else. We have a multicultural, very, very diverse neighborhood and members of our watch. I don't see any connection to that at all. This is a thing of suspicion or, you know, keeping an eye out for one another. It runs the gamut of every race, color, creed. It's a matter of a suspect, not of a certain persuasion. That doesn't come into our psyche here.
Is there a sense, though, for all of you that this whole case and the national debate that's been going on here has made it harder for you to do what you do, that this is a moment that is painful for you because it speaks against really the proud tradition that all three of you seem to be upholding? Larkin?
No, I mean, I think that it gives us probably all reason to step back and say, well, maybe we should have some more cut and dry policies and cut and dry procedures. But I think that it sounds like none of the three of us are involved in programs that would ever encourage a situation like what happened, where somebody confronts a person that they don't know and that they don't know to be doing anything wrong. So I think that the people in our neighborhoods probably know that what we're doing is nothing like what took place down in Florida. And so I don't think that it's going to draw any extra scrutiny, but I think it does give us a good opportunity to reevaluate the policies and procedures we have in place.
Barry?
I agree as well, and I think that we need more training. We have community service officers that go out to these crime watches and to talk about this stuff. We're in the process of putting together a neighborhood watch university where we can train people who are in these crime watches, and again, to do it more by calling 911 and not reacting the way Mr. Zimmerman did.
Peter Nichols, has it changed, made it harder for you to uphold the tradition that you've been involved with there in Melrose?
No, because, you know, we've had in place with the Los Angeles Police Department community policing for many years. So I talk to our commanders at our Wilshire division here, our senior lead officers for our area 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day. I mean, this is a cooperative situation that we run. This is nothing rogue or anything. I don't know what the situation in Sanford is like, but I foresee there's more of these issues in departments that are smaller, that are less trained and less community driven. You know, this is very much a deal with community policing here. I would think for, you know, my colleagues here, it would be the same thing.
Gut feeling for the three of you before we go, and we don't want to disparage the people of Florida. Could this happen anywhere, or is this a Florida thing, this case, Peter?
I think this is a rogue thing. I think, you know, anything is possible anywhere with anyone.
Barry Mullen, a Florida thing, the Trayvon Martin Zimmerman case, or could it happen anywhere?
It could happen anywhere, but unfortunately, you know, I just don't see violence solving violent problems. To me, it just blows my mind. I just think it went way too far. I don't know. I'm just blown away with this whole thing.
Larkin Eggleston, final thought from you.
I mean, it could certainly happen anywhere. You can't ultimately control what any one individual is going to do. So there's probably somebody in every state who, you know, sees themselves as the arm of the law, despite the fact that they're not a sworn officer. And if you've got a person who is a bit overzealous, to say the least, in a neighborhood watch program, it's something you need to monitor or maybe prevent that person from being a part of it, because you certainly don't want to be the next state where something like this happens.
Well, Peter, Barry, and Larkin, thanks so much for a candid discussion this morning. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.